is The End User, episode 159 for Tuesday, January 21st. Delicious and Martian. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr. Chris, I feel like we're having a CES hangover, even though we weren't there.
Yeah, kind of. The news is a little thin this week, but yeah, we managed to put together a pretty good show, I think.
Thin but important, but also not so important. But our top news is very important, at least in the United States. The principle of net neutrality is on the verge of being lost forever.
Yeah, so there's been a court case here, and forgive us, neither of us are lawyers, so I'm sure we'll get some of the lawyerly things wrong here. But the upshot is that it's a case that is Verizon versus the FCC, and the upshot is that the court has ruled that since Verizon, as an ISP, is not classified as a common carrier, that the FCC does not have the authority to put regulation like net neutrality in place for Verizon.
Yeah, that's right. So this was a DC Circuit Court decision, which means that it still can be appealed to the Supreme Court. But in the meantime, there could be a basic loss of net neutrality on Verizon, on all the other ISP networks in the nation. And who knows what will happen to world ISPs after that. But right now, there is something that you can do. There is a White House petition that's been started. You can sign it on the internet. They require 100,000 signatures, and they only have 31,000 so far. Now, this petition won't force anyone to do anything, except the White House will have to issue an official response explaining their position if the 100,000 signature goal is released. So we have a link to the petition in the show notes, and we encourage all of our listeners to take just a minute and sign it.
So as, you know, technology enthusiasts, we look at this and it seems obvious that net neutrality should be the way things happen, right?
Right.
And so it's an interesting question. I think just about everybody except for the ISPs who don't want to be regulated can agree that net neutrality should happen. And I guess the question is the FCC the organization to do that? I think it's reasonable, right? They're dealing with communications, and this is in fact communications. Whether you call it common carrier or not, it seems to me that that would be in their wheelhouse.
And The Verge has taken an interesting position on this subject. They analyzed the bill in the court case, and they have determined that the original law was written poorly, and it's the technicality of the poor writing, the terms that were used, that caused the court to rule in favor of Verizon in this case.
So more importantly, perhaps, is the media coverage, I think, has been interesting. It's been full of hyperbole from what I've seen, because at the heart of this, you know, the Verizon as an ISP is not classified as a common carrier, and therefore they're not within the FCC's jurisdiction. So if that's the case, then they can, you know, make them common carrier, or Congress can pass some laws to regulate net neutrality in some way, even if they're not a common carrier. So those are the two options. And the most of the writing I've seen has been completely hyperbolic. And, you know, even the one we're sharing here, which is probably the best of the lot from what I've seen, says how the FCC lost net neutrality and could kill the internet. And I don't think a response of that magnitude is really warranted in this case.
Right. It's not going to kill the internet, not anytime soon, not in any way that we would recognize it. What it's going to do is eliminate a certain level playing field that makes it more fair for smaller companies to compete with big ones, because they won't have to compete for premium bandwidth levels at prices that they can't afford.
See, but I'm not even sure it means that, right? What this means is that the FCC never declared Verizon as an ISP as a common carrier, and therefore they don't have the authority to do anything. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't come back later and work that out.
Okay, I see what you're saying, but this feels a whole lot like them working it out, and it feels like it's going it definitely appears to be going in the wrong direction from a consumer standpoint. And eventually it does all, like, if this law passes and it's not worked out in the future, that is the direct consequence. That
yes,
there will no longer be a level playing field for small companies that don't have money to pay for premium bandwidth to compete with big companies that can.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. And I think at the end of the day, right now, we are in a middle land where we don't really know what's going to happen with this. And I think at the end of the day, at the end of the year, you know, further out into the future, I think they're going to figure it out and net neutrality will live on. That is my sincere hope for what's going to happen. And I think all of the technical details of, you know, the lawsuits and that kind of thing is maybe a little less interesting, but I bet you this will eventually be figured out and net neutrality will happen and the internet won't be killed. That's that's what I think.
Well, I like your optimism.
Yeah, so let's get optimistic and flip on the afterburners. Are you, you got your seatbelt on?
I do, but I'm not optimistic, Chris. Our first afterburner is some bad news for owners of 2011 MacBook Pros, the 15-inch and the 17-inch size. There have been numerous reports of failing graphics cards coming in just over the last few weeks and months. The AMD HD 6000 graphics chips have been failing in pretty large numbers, usually causing strange on-screen behavior, and graphic intense applications have been shown to trigger the problems in certain cases. Now, Apple hasn't responded to this yet, but in past cases, they have often replaced the computers. But this will be a necessary full logic board replacement for anyone who suffers from this problem. Now, whether that's covered by the extended warranty or not is that remains to be seen.
So the Nest CEO, Tony Fadell, has revealed that there will in fact be no changes to the privacy policy over at Nest after their acquisition from Google. And he says that, quote, if there were any changes whatsoever, we would be sure to be transparent about it, number one, and number two, for you to opt into it. So that is kind of reassuring. You know, if you are having any reservations about Google having a sensor in your home that can control your heater and that kind of thing, that should make it pretty clear where Nest falls on that.
Now, Amazon has filed an interesting patent. We don't usually report on patents, but they have come up with a method and system for what they call anticipatory package shipping, which means that they will start shipping a package before you order it. We don't have much more than that because it's just a patent, but I actually think it's pretty smart. They're just taking advantage of the laws of large numbers to start moving packages around before people even buy them.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. And I could see them, canceling it at the last minute or something like that if you don't actually order it. And I bet you they could cut down on that time from order to your doorstep.
Right. Well, if you don't actually order it, they'll probably just have it be waiting somewhere nearby for someone else to order.
Right, exactly. So, interesting stuff. So, there is now a competitor for iBeacon, and it is strangely called Datzing. It's for Android for the moment, and they're planning to roll it out for iOS later. The you can sign up and receive zings and, you know, get mobile advertising and coupons and stuff like that. I'm still a little unsure what the point of iBeacon and Datzing is, but I guess we'll see if people in the market respond to it.
It sounds like something else. It sounds like a dating app for Danziger fans. All right, but speaking of apps, there is a new app from the television network FXX, and they are a subsidiary of Fox, and they have acquired the rights to every Simpsons episode. So they will begin streaming on their cross-platform app every season of The Simpsons in August. And meanwhile, they will be streaming other FX shows. And in other streaming app news, Google Play Movies and Television now has its own app for iOS. Now, because of Apple's regulations, Google will not be selling any media on their new app. You have to buy it from the website, and then it'll be available on the app to stream. This is because Google doesn't want to pay 30% off of every purchase that's made on iOS. But you also won't be able to download the movies and watch them later. And that may have to do with Google's intentions about the app, but there's no reason that Apple would prevent them from letting you download the movies and watch them. But you can't, for whatever reason.
So RDO has introduced unlimited free streaming on their website. So if you want to get ad-free streaming on mobile platforms, you still have to have a subscription. But if you want ad-supported streaming on the desktop, you can sign up for their unlimited streaming offer now. So Spotify recently announced something similar. It's good to see RDO kind of follow suit there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Spotify has now announced that they have eliminated any time limits and restrictions on all of their streaming apps. So even with the ad-supported desktop app, you can stream for as long as you want. The subscription version still gets you freedom from ads and the ability to select whichever song you want.
Yeah, and that's the killer feature of Spotify, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's turn off our afterburners. We can slow down a little bit and get into the end user stories. And first up, we've got some security news. And this is a little bit interesting. The apparently, the Starbucks iOS app is leaving its users' username and password in the clear in a log file on the phone. So anybody with physical access to the phone could get in there and suck out the username and password. So it, you know, physical attacks are always a little bit less worrisome than the remote kind of attacks that can affect people. But still, Starbucks needs to care about security, and this is one little bit of it, right?
Absolutely. And this ended up coming out of a crash report log, and so I'm sure that it was just an oversight. But Starbucks is a big enough corporation, and they pushed their mobile app hard enough that this is not a mistake that should have happened.
Yeah, it's again, it's a lot less important when you're talking about physical access. But still, there's no excuse for that kind of mistake. And, you know, hopefully they fix it and we can forget about it and move on. But it does bring up, when I think about it, you know, kind of a larger issue is that, you know, you really have no idea what half the applications you're using are doing. You know, in the web, we have mechanisms to figure out what we're doing on the web. So in other words, when I go to establish, you know, a connection with Facebook, we're over SSL. I know we're over SSL. I can see the certificate and I can see the encryption level. And, you know, there are certain things you can't figure out, but there's a lot that you can figure out on the web and whether or not the thing that you're using is secure or not. And with the apps, a lot of the mechanisms that are there to tell you about the connection that you have to their server is just not there.
It's hidden, yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of obfuscated. You know, who knows if the app is using SSL? It's hard to tell. And there are ways to tell, but you have to, like, set up a proxy server and some kind of madness like that. But just the general consumer of the app kind of has no idea what the app is doing.
I agree. It's a problem. And I actually just downloaded the Starbucks app because I was given a gift card for Christmas. So I loaded up the gift card and put it on the app. And you know what happened? It crashed.
Did it really? So
yeah.
And then it logged your account credentials, I'm sure.
Right. Well, I mean, it only logged the gift card credentials and probably my name and email address. So I'm not worried about a credit card being stolen, even if my phone was stolen. But for anyone who has refilled their Starbucks card on their phone, then that crash log contains credit card information.
Yeah, that is not good. Now, you are protected somewhat from your PIN. Ars Technica here says that you could bypass that within 30 minutes somehow, but So it's a little more of a theoretical attack than some of the remote stuff that we've seen happen before, and, you know, databases leaking and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely not good in the end. They should plug that up. And they said they've done something. They didn't really say much about it. So kind of hard to say at this point in time.
Yeah, it is. And I was really expecting, it's been several days at this point, I was expecting a speedier response from Starbucks. They should fix the app already.
Yeah, just fix the app.
All right. So in another the end user public service announcement of sorts, we have a story about Chrome extensions. Now, there are a lot of people out there. A lot of our listeners use Chrome and have extensions on it. But it's just been discovered that Chrome extensions can be signed as trustworthy and then transferred to another party of ownership. That is, the person who created and maintains the extension can be changed after you install the extension, and then someone else would have access to your instance of Chrome. They can then use that for malicious purposes, for malware, or to take information from you, from your browser habits, and sell the information.
Yeah, so basically somebody can make a Chrome extension for some useful thing or another, and then an ad company can come along and pay the developer for the Chrome extension and then use that to push updates to the Chrome extension that, you know, serve ads and that kind of thing. And I guess there's been a recent glut of this kind of behavior happening, and it's some of the stuff is gray, and I guess the couple Chrome extensions that this happened to recently are over onto the bad side of that equation and have gone a little bit too far.
So be careful of your Chrome extensions. Only download ones that you trust and make sure to keep an eye on them over time, because they may be selling and or serving you advertisements.
And one last thing here is if an application does get a new permission, then the one that allows it to do this kind of over-the-top behavior is called Access Your Data on All Web Pages. So if you see that and you think the extension doesn't need that kind of permission, you might want to think again. All right, so let's move on to our green tech story of the week. As usual, Mr. Marr, you have us covered. What's going on here?
Now, usually I have an optimistic green tech story, and occasionally it's useful, and occasionally it's far-fetched, and occasionally it's incredibly geeky, and occasionally I don't even understand it completely myself. But this one is simple and kind of sad. It is just a report that as the result of the latest budget deal in the U.S. Congress, the light bulb efficiency standard that was set to phase out incandescent light bulbs over the next year or two has been scrapped from law, and it will have to come up at some other point, hopefully, but there's no plans on the table to do it now. So I guess the good news is that you continue to buy whatever light bulb you want in this country, but please don't buy incandescent bulbs. They're not very good.
It is my right as an American, Taylor, to buy incandescent bulbs.
I fully support the use of incandescent light bulbs in easy bake ovens.
Nice.
Let it
yeah.
be known.
That's that they put off enough heat that you can actually make an oven out of them. That's right.
Exactly. That's their primary purpose in life, is to generate heat. Light is a secondary initiative.
Yeah, so I'm not actually serious there. I've got LED bulbs in my apartment now as well, so that's kind of disappointing to see. All right, let's get out of the green tech story of the week, and let's go into our tip of the week. And as usual, you, via Lifehacker, has us covered. So what do we got here?
All right, so this is a Windows app that I found that I thought was really cool, because I definitely never had this when I was using Windows as my day-to-day machine, but I do have this with my Mac products. It's called Who Is On My Wi-Fi, and it is a little program that lets you see who's on your Wi-Fi network. I can do this by logging into my airport router with my airport utility on my Mac or iOS devices, right. And I can see who is connected to each individual router on my network, which is great. But this Windows app, Who's On My Wi-Fi, provides a lot more features and information about each of the devices on your network. So it's pretty cool. I thought it was enjoyable. This was definitely something that I wished that I had many years ago when I was on Windows and didn't. So if you don't have something like this, I'm sure there are some pro network utility apps that have many more features than this. But this is a nice little free app that will let you know who's on your Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, neat. So normally you'd have to log into your router to get that kind of information, but I guess they try to find out who else is on the Wi-Fi somehow. That's cool.
Right. Now, since Mac users already have something like that, at least if they're using airport routers, I have a different Mac app for my app pick of the week, and this one is called Scribe. It works for iOS and Mac, and really you're supposed to use them together. Because it can copy your clipboard from iOS to Mac. So it syncs your copy and paste between the two devices, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So it does that over Bluetooth LE.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing. This is the kind of application that you just wouldn't think of happening, that Bluetooth LE has kind of enabled. Really cool stuff. All right, well, we warned you it was going to be a bit of a short show this week. Let's move directly into our kicker. And luckily for us, it is a kicker in space.
Yes, it is a double space kicker. So the first story is from a satellite that launched 31 months ago called Rosetta. It has been quietly sleeping and orbiting the Earth, and the European Space Agency has just woken up Rosetta to get ready for the second phase of its mission, which will be to fly by a comet and launch a probe into that comet.
That is pretty amazing. We've got devices out there that have left the solar system. We're sending a satellite that was hibernating in orbit to latch onto a comet in some way. It's really cool stuff. I'm always heartily encouraged to see everything that we're doing with space.
Right. We seem to really be getting a handle on space, but then every once in a while, it throws us for a loop.
Yeah, space like handles you.
Like the Mars Curiosity rover, which has just discovered a rock in its path that just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah, so this is cool. They don't quite know exactly what happened, and I don't think that they're probably going to release an update at some point with some theories. And
well, all they know for sure is that as the rover was making its way along, they took several pictures of the same area. And when they scanned it back about 2 days later, there was a rock near the rover that was not there before. For sure. It is a rock that is roughly the size of a jelly donut. And they think it may have been kicked up by one of the wheels of the rover, which coincidentally is behaving erratically now.
Yeah, that would kind of make more sense than, you know, all of the alien theories.
Right. So they don't know where it came from, and they're not sure how it got there. But they do know one thing for sure. It has been flipped upside down from however it was sitting for the last however many billion years. So now they have a piece of Mars surface that has all of a sudden been exposed to the atmosphere for the first time in billions of years, and they can send the rover over to investigate.
Cool. Yeah, I prefer the alien theory where, you know, there are just Martians up there that, you know, they're just kind of throwing a rock out to see if the rover will notice or not.
Or a jelly donut.
Or it's a jelly donut. That's also delicious. Delicious and Martian. All right, well, that is it for the show. Again, it's a bit of a short week after our CES hangover, so we will come back next week, and I'm sure we'll have a little bit more news. So, Taylor, if somebody wanted to contact you, perhaps send you a story that we could cover, how would they go about doing that?
They should throw a small jelly donut-shaped rock at me.
And what should they scribe the link onto the rock or something?
Nah, I'll get it.
You'll figure it out? All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But another way to reach me with jelly donut related news is to tweet me on Twitter. I am at TaylorPhone.
All right. And if you want to give me stories about jelly donuts, I am at Chris Hill Barnes. So let us know. So thank you everyone for listening to the show, and of course you can find more information including the show notes over there at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, the movie podcast, and Home On. You can send us Jelly Donut related feedback at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. Together we are at @theenduser. You can join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime Taylor Moth.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.